Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Lisa Lisa Show. This is Lisa Lisa speaking to you live from the home front. Sorry about that. So, lots to talk about today. In fact, I'm going to get started straight away because seems to be a lot. So, I have to say, first of all, thank you to a very good friend of mine for alerting me and actually making a request of what she wanted me to talk about. And, you know, all requests are always appreciated and followed up with. So thank you so much for your request. So I have to say that the weather has been spectacular. I don't mind the humidity these days, but it's really gorgeous. Summer is definitely winding down, but it's still just so beautiful. In fact, last night when I left my studio, I went for a walk in my area, my neighborhood, by the waterfront in Long Island City, and there was a jazz band playing. And even though it wasn't, like, so important to listen to the jazz band, not exactly a big fan, but it was nice background music, and it was a gorgeous backdrop. The sky colors were just incredible, like these really deep purpley blues that were really pale before they got really intense and deep, which is pretty much what I've been painting these days, so that was really lovely. And then, of course, I ran into a friend I hadn't seen for a while. So always nice to run into people and have, you know, nice conversations. Good tidings, always a good thing. So getting straight away. So my friend got in touch with me, KV, and asked me if I knew anything about Comet 67P or the Black Duck or the Singing Comet, all synonymous. So the Black Duck is one of the oldest, actually technically, I don't know if it's the oldest, it's one of the oldest, it's thousands of years old. And so I did my homework, and I pulled up some information about the comet. And I have to say, thank you so much for alerting me to this, because I didn't know any of this. And I have followed all these probes and things running out into space, and, you know, the Mars probe and the rover and all these various different treks that they've been doing. So the ESA, which is the European Space Agency, launched a probe, the Rosetta probe, and it was 10 years ago. All right, so let's just do this scientifically straight away. Okay, so the probe was launched, and on August 6th, it made its first contact with this comet. So 10 years it's been out there flying around. So this is the information that we have. So starting from the beginning. All right. First of all, how did it get there? Okay. So it had to fly three times by Earth, making one round trip past Mars in order to gain enough speed to pass Jupiter. And then on its way to meet up with the comet, it also encountered two other asteroids, Deimos and Lutetia. And I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, Lutetia. It's probably Lutetia. It also had to go five times around the sun. So after 10 years, 5 months, and 4 days traveling towards its destination, looping around the sun five times, clocking up to 6.4 billion kilometers, which is 4 billion miles. That's what I said, billion. So Europe's Rosetta is now the first spacecraft in history to rendezvous with a comet. And this is all because they want to know where we came from. So think about the questions that they're asking, okay? And then I'm going to give you all this information. So the questions are, how did we get here? Can we discover what really put us here? I guess they're talking about the Big Bang, or, you know, the particles and how they all came together. So it's about exploring our origins and discovering our start. So Rosetta's traveling 4 billion miles to the comet, and it is flying. Okay, so here's some information. So although the Rosetta and the comet 67P CG, which are the names of the two people that discovered it, are flying about 251 million miles from Earth right now. And that number is slightly deceiving, since its launch in 2004. Rosetta has been speeding through the solar system on a journey to catch up with this comet, and they're finally together. So now that was the target, was to reach that comet. So the questions that they're asking, the really big questions are, where did we come from? Where does the solar system we live in come from? I love this. How is it put together? How is it assembled? How did the planets get to build up individually, and how did water get to this planet that we live on in the first place? Well, actually, I kind of know the answer to that one. So even though scientists are asking that question, the reason that we have water on this planet, and we are not a water planet, in fact, we're a very dry planet, all of our water is surface only, and it was from meteors that hit us that contained water. I did a show on that maybe a year ago, talking about how we're a dry planet and talking about the layers of our planet in general. I have to say that was one of my favorite shows, and it got a lot of really good feedback. So I can answer that one. I'll call them up and I'll tell them, hey, I know. Okay, so how big is Comet 67P, or the Black Duck? And I'll tell you why it's called the Black Duck. So it's like two asteroids that are connected with a smaller, what looks like a neck. So it actually looks like a black duck hurling through space. And because it's so dark that you have to have like backlight, there's a certain time of night that they can actually see it. And it's really like in shadow all the time. So this comet is 2.5 miles wide. That means it's larger than Mount Fuji in Japan, which is about 2.3 miles. I have all these notes, so let me get back to my notes and answering all these various questions. I'm sure I'm going to get a phone call later, and I'm going to say, did I cover everything? So this spacecraft, which is the, what is it called? The Rosetta probe, the Rosetta probe went into hibernation in 2011, and then when it got into orbit, which is now 62, I think they said it was 62, I have it right here, miles away from the actual comet. So it's going to drop a lander. So this is what they want to do. So this is the important part, right? So they want, it's also called the singing comet, I mentioned that. So I Googled it, and then I looked it up, and I found the sound that it makes. It's very interesting. If I can play it for you, I will. If I can't, I guess I won't. So where were we? Okay, so the Rosetta will drop a lander on the comet, and that lander is carrying all sorts of special equipment, and it's going to start tracking. It's triangular orbit. It's in a tracking of a triangular orbit right now, and as it moves into a circular orbit and it starts to get closer to the surface in the next couple of weeks, it's going to gear up to release the fillet lander. That's what it's called. So before this lander touches down, Mission Control will scope out all the series of potential landing spots for the probe. And once it's on the surface, it's going to shoot back all kinds of data about the comet itself. Now, this comet is made up of dust and ice, and there's all sorts of particles on top before it gets down too. So they're flying 62 miles apart, and it's expected to land in November that they're going to shoot off the lander. I think that's really cool. So over the next few months, all we're going to be doing is collecting data. I think that's also very cool. So here's the information about the comet. It's a dark and dusty comet, and it's been around for thousands of years. And they're saying that they think it has patches of ice with dust, a dark crust covering a good portion of its surface. Where was the rest of that? And I don't know. I have to tell you, just looking at it, all the pictures, very interesting. I guess I didn't put this together as well as I wanted to. And I've been, like, reading through all these pages because I ended up printing it all out because I just thought that that might make it a little bit easier. But I have to say the size of it is really cool. So what they did was when I was Googling around, I found a picture of the black duck, and they did this comparison to New York City. So picture zooming out of New York City from a very, very far distance. So you have the whole 8 Mile Island in the distance. And then the black duck behind it is so big that it pales in comparison. Well, think about Mount Fuji. So if you move Mount Fuji and you put it behind New York City, that's what we're talking about, all right, albeit the shape is different. So I thought that was so cool, the whole thing about this comet. So they think that there were sinkholes on it, but apparently now they're saying there are not, that it's just details of what it was. One of the things that I got that I found said that there was a black hole on it. I don't think that's possible. So I think that was a little misinformation. But it's just hurling through space. I think that it's amazing that the probe had to go around the sun 5 times. I mean, think about it. It's like a slingshot. So it circled around the Earth 3 times and then went around Mars once just to get past Jupiter. That to me is mind-blowing. So there you have it. And as the weeks go by, I'll keep updating and giving you more information about this. Let's see if I can play what it sounds like, because I actually queued that up. Where are you? Let's see. So it's kind of interesting sound that it makes. Each thing has its own whatever. Okay, here we go. Let's see if you can hear this. Interesting, right? Okay, I know that was kind of crazy, but for a minute and change. But that's the sound of the comet doing its little thing. So now we have to shut it off because my phone is doing its own thing, because that's what my phone does. So I have to say that the information is really interesting, and if you Google it, you'll find it. It's Comet 67P. I don't think it's going to come up as Black Duck straight away, but it's very, very interesting. Okay, so now the other story that I wanted to talk about was the Titanic. So the other night I came in, and I just put on the TV for some background noise, and I usually have the Discover Channel on or something along that line. And I came across this thing where they were like a crime scene detecting something about the Titanic, and they came across some new news. Now, I know it's been, you know, everybody does their thing about the Titanic and they're all interested in all of these things, but this was really actually groundbreaking. I have to say this was probably the most interesting of all the information that I've ever seen on the Titanic. So they were saying that the night that the iceberg hit the ship, because they kept saying, how is it with all these guys watching for icebergs that no one saw it? Okay, and that was always the million-dollar question, right? So what they were calling it was a soft horizon. And what happened was there was a very cold chill in the air. There was a cold front moving down from the north, and they were in warmer waters. Now, mind you, they're in the Atlantic, so the water was not by any way, shape, or form warm at any point. But the water that was coming across, that was on its way down with these icebergs, was by far much, much colder, by about 30 to 40 degrees. That's a huge difference. So now they were looking through the logs of other ships, and they were saying that they were seeing refractions or mirages. So think about when you're in your car and you're driving and it's very, very hot, and you're looking at the road in front of you, and it looks like water, okay? That's a mirage. That's a soft horizon. That's about refractions. So what's happening is that the ground is hotter than the air. And what happens is the air and the ground manifest its own type of temperature. So between the temperature change in the air, what happens is you get a mirage or something that looks like water. Now, on the ocean, what happens is the water surface is probably colder than the air surface, so it's the opposite. So what happens is the mirage is upside down. So you're already looking at water, but what happens is it reflects the light. There's what they call refractions and a mirage. And they call it a soft horizon because the air temperature is competing with the water temperature. And it, what it does is it rises the horizon line, making the illusion of a second horizon line. And this illusion, with all the, they were talking about how starry the night was. So what happened was, if the backdrop was lifted by the illusion of a mirage, then the iceberg was coveted and you couldn't see it because it was light on a dark background. But now it's dark on a dark background because it was always dark in the first place because there's no light and there was no moon that night. So here's what they were saying. Between the guys not seeing the iceberg until it was really upon them, and obviously we know the story about the iceberg and then the ship going down. Well, what happened was the California was really only 5 miles away. But because of this soft horizon and these refractions and the mirage effect, they were looking at a ship that looked in comparison much smaller, because when you have the opposite of the water effect and the horizon is lifted, what it does is it turns the ship upside down. So it gives you a reflection in the opposite, so that the top of the ship, where the four stacks are now above it, and then the bottom of the ship, where the whole base of the ship is above the ship. So now picture this illusion, and you can see it in daylight. It's not just nighttime. So what happens is the reflection of the stacks on top of each other, with the ship above it looking like a mirror image above, made it look like a much smaller ship or a cargo ship, or I think that they thought it was a freight ship. That's what I said, cargo. So what happened was they're looking at something completely different, and what they thought was one thing was really not. It was the actual ship. So if the California had just gone and you know, just to check it out, that would have been, you know, a whole different story. But because they were looking at it and it looked by far in comparison much smaller, they never went. Now, the other thing they were talking about was, because there was so much noise of light, think about looking at Vegas at night. You're looking at all these lights and they're all twinkling and they're moving. And so what's happening is they're sending each other messages, but there's so much star and there was so much refraction that their lights were not being read properly or at all, if at all. So I thought that was a really interesting take on the whole thing with the California and the Titanic. So when the Titanic actually sank, one of the passengers that survived, one of the survivors, was looking at the ship going down, and he said that there was a mist over the ship, and that was what All right, so that was caused, that's a vapor, and that was because of the air temperature. So closer to the water, it was colder. Higher up, it was warmer. And even though, so what was happening was this cold water was moving in. So it's cold on the bottom again, warmer on the air. So the water temperature and the air temperature were colliding, causing all these different effects. And so there seemed to be this vapor in the air that hovered above the ship. I thought that was really interesting. So, you know, just, you know, one of those things, soft horizon, refractions, and mirages. Now, you're talking about, you know, 1912. It was like, I'm not saying that they didn't have the technology, but they still had the same language. And even though you're unable to explain it or express it in such detail, they're still seeing exactly the same thing. So you can you know, Google that as well, soft horizon, refractions of light, and a mirage. So I thought that was all really interesting. I probably didn't spend enough time on the black comet, on the black duck. But I have to say that I'm always excited when something new is going on scientifically and in space. So, yeah, it was just really interesting. So there was a lot of things that were going on. Apparently I have a little more time, and I've had a really interesting week. In fact, my Kuan Yin has arrived. She's in my house. She's with me. She's gorgeous, and I'm very thankful and grateful for her. I spray painted her. I cleaned her up really well, and after spraying her down and cleaning her up, apparently there was some residual thing coming out, some little like molasses type drippings. Not exactly sure what that's from, because resin, when it's set and dry, it's dry. And, you know, she's not, you know, young. I don't know when she was made, but anyway, so I cleaned her up and I spray painted her. She's kind of bronze and gold mix, two different bronzes and the gold, and she's just gorgeous. I'm just so I'm thrilled that she's finally here. And yeah, that's a good thing. So I don't know. I'm on a new trek. I have to say that I just started a new type of class. Not exactly sure how to talk about it, because I don't know. I'm still in the workings. I only had my first class, but it's something that I have to say I'm really thrilled about. So kind of a crazy thing. I also wanted to mention the plant that I have, my ginger, the one that's finally flowering, that took 6.5 years to finally flower. They're tiny little flowers, but they're such a beautiful, vibrant purple. They're just gorgeous. So very happy about that. Lots going on this week. Teaching tomorrow, and, you know, just all sorts of good stuff. So there were so many things I wanted to talk about. It's just so funny. I'd finally made the decision that I'm going to buy an instrument with the convincing of my brother, telling me that everybody in this family should have an instrument because we're all very musically inclined. So I'm finally going to go and buy that drum. Yes, I really am. Yeah, kind of excited about that. Made the decision. So I was going to buy it online, but now I'm thinking I'd rather just go and try them out, you know, rather than buying it sight unseen. So I think that's going to be the better way to go. I have to say, at a loss here. Don't like to be at a loss. Also, I wanted to thank everybody for listening. I had so many listeners last week and a lot of live listeners, so that was really cool. And, yeah, I have to say, when you see the pictures of this, the Rosetta, as they're calling it, the real Rosetta Stone, I guess I'll just go back to this, that it's a 10-year mission and it's finally reached its destination. When you see the orbit that it made and the pictures of Saturn behind Lutetia, that's really incredible. It's just so black with that, the sun just hitting Saturn, right? It's just such a cool picture. But when you see the pictures of the orbit, it's like, when you think about it, I don't know, it's to get momentum, right? So it's spinning around and around, so it's getting further and further away. So when you first see the trajectory, it's very close to the sun. And then it gets, and I'm sure that it's not even nearly close to the sun, but when you see the trajectory, the first spin is very close to the sun, and then it starts to make an oval. And then, so the second oval turns into a, the third is a perfect circle, and then the fourth is a bigger oval. And then by the fifth, it's a huge oval, and that's the one that shoots it out. And that's when it was able to pass Jupiter. I think I'm reading that wrong. I'm sorry, around the Earth. It was three around the Earth to pass Jupiter. So Earth, then Mars, and then Jupiter. And then the Sun. It's just, I think it's the same thing. It's like this whole thing about gaining momentum. So, you know, my nephew is a javelin thrower, and he was trying to teach me this summer. We were all taking turns throwing the javelin. And he was talking about how you have to do this foot-over-foot running pattern. And then you let go, you throw it. So the momentum that they're talking about is like you're moving with the object. So I guess that's always how that works. Now, I have to say that outer space stuff always baffles me. Kind of, it's mind-boggling, I'd have to say, that there's so many things that I understand on so many levels. And at the same time, there are so many things that I just don't grasp, even though I understand them theoretically. I guess because I haven't put them to practice. You know, they say those, I talk about it all the time, the three. So you can read about something, you've got knowledge, and you can do something, then you've got experience. But if you have knowledge and experience, then you become an expert. So if you only do something but you don't have the knowledge, then you're kind of, it's like, it's not a good thing. It doesn't, you know, it's not a good thing. It's like then you're doing something, but whether you're doing it without the knowledge, oh, God, how did that go? You have to have all three. It's those two make the pinnacle triangle, right? So if you're just doing something but you don't have any knowledge, you just have experience, then you just don't know. But once you have the information and the knowledge and then you have the experience, all right, so that's the expert. So I can't say I'm an expert on space because I've never been there, but I've definitely read a lot about it, but the fact is that I still haven't done anything. So I only know information. There's no practice. So reading up on these things and then looking at them, okay, I'm definitely not going to be starting to go into outer space anytime soon, right? Isn't that just the way that goes? I don't think so. So there's really no way to gain experience other than just to have knowledge. And I have to say that it still blows my mind. It's so interesting and unfathomable. And the course that I just started doing, as I'm going to call it a course, talks about how to put all these things in perspective, and that simultaneously all these things are happening. Sort of like that Superman thing, you know. So Superman is on this plane. Oh, this was so funny. Maybe Superman's not the best way to talk about it, but it's like they talk about that everything's happening simultaneously. So one of the things they talk about is astral projection. 60 seconds. So astral projection. Okay, so now think about this. You sit down, you're really quiet, and you focus on something, and now you put yourself into a state of maybe a meditative state or, you know, and you picture yourself going into an astral projection and that there's another you on another plane. There were so many movies made about stuff like this. And then, you know, so they say that they're all simultaneous. But the thing is, the time is really irrelevant. Oh, by the way, speaking of time, the 100-year mark, I don't know if I said this last week, for Einstein's relativity was last week. So I think that's 10 seconds apropos that you're talking about getting the Rosetta there now. I all of that stuff always blows my mind. It's like I always followed all these various different probes, and I don't know, there's just this one I'm going to have to say, I will keep you informed, and in November I'll let you know more. But if you have any questions or you want to send me any emails, I can definitely forward the information. I hope that I answered all the questions. I hope that I informed you enough. And have a fabulous day. Thank you so much for listening. This is Lisa Lisa of the Lisa Lisa Show, signing off.